I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to Culture Terror. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and Evangelion is overrated.
So true. Well, we'll get into it. Yeah, I guess we said
my biggest take of the day. Just a little teaser.
We said Gundam, and I actually have the least. Well, I'll get into that in a second. But yeah, this is kind of I sort of slotted this as Giant Robots Part 1. We'll be doing a Giant Robots Part 2 soon, trademark. But
this is the Gundam.
Yeah, I mean, right. But the I think that the topic of giant robots is really, you know, mecha anime, of which Gundam is the kind of paradigmatic case, and probably still certainly among the biggest, if not, depending on the point in time, necessarily the single biggest.
I think it's the most profitable for sure, right,
over time, which gets into, unfortunately, it didn't occur to me until like essentially right before recording that I should have invited our friend Otto on, because I know he's recently been doing a bunch of is it pronounced Gunpla? I presume Gunpla, the Gundam plastic model.
Yeah, he's just
the models, yeah. Yeah. Which is like literally just cheap. Well, maybe not necessarily all that, you know, cheap, but in terms of the quality of materials. But
miniatures for babies.
It's literal plastic that people play, you know, pay money, like, you know, it's obscene, you know, profit margins for, which is fine. I mean, whatever. I do
snap together.
I do shit like that all the. I mean, I'm not like, but yeah. I'm not against. Anyway,
it's no 40K. It's no, like, you're not painting it, you're not...
Shots fired! Not melting people, you know? Oh, goodness. This is the great... Oh, you know, you thought the shit with the Americana was bad, but now we're doing the Gundam versus 40K? Like, holy crap.
Okay, I'm saying, in terms of... I am a Gundam enjoyer. This is a Gundam, pro-Gundam show. But in terms of, like, miniatures and skill, you know...
I don't Gundam think you're making it better.
Gundam is easier to make the miniatures.
Yes, snap together plastic kits are, yes. And there's like non...
Obviously.
I think there's some crusty old... I mean, I was only ever at the periphery of that world, but I think there's crusty old hobbyist types who used to do... You know, they used to have like... You know, you could buy at the hobby shop like a model Tiger Panzer or whatever. And those... I think they were... Even those are quite a bit, I guess, depending on the series. It could be tough even just to assemble, to say nothing of painting and so on. But we get way ahead of ourselves. I want to introduce again our returning guest, Ty Guy. Do you want to say hi?
On the scale of difficulty, model airplanes, Sherman's hardest, miniatures like glue together, Warhammer, that type of GW stuff and the derivations of it. And then below that is snapped together,
yeah,
unpainted, already colored plastic. And right. I don't think that's controversial.
No, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
Go ahead.
Let's let our guest talk.
Zeke Zeon! Zeke Zeon! For the glories and ideals of Zeon! Zeke Zeon! All right, anyways, well, thank you for having me back on the show. I'm super excited to talk about one of my favorite animes of all time, specifically the... Universal Century timeline of Gundam, and how it's the more science fiction nerdy, at least for most of the series in it. But yeah, and the narratives involved. But yeah, thanks for having me back on, guys.
I'm ready to have you. I'm glad. I wanted to do a Gundam episode. I actually recently, like in the last year, gotten into Gundam in the deep dive when I had access to a borrowed Netflix account. And Netflix had all the original Universal Century movies, like condensed,
Encounters in Space and stuff, like the compilation movies.
Yeah,
Yeah, oh, they're so good. Oh, the music, yeah. Dude.
Oh, no, no. It was it. I really enjoyed it. I think they're totally worth watching, especially for kids. I would say maybe the kids who aren't like, you know, maybe 7 years old up, because people like it's an anime. It has anime stuff. But like people do just get wrecked. And that's what I want to get my first thing is that Evangelion is like it's not that before I had actually watched Gundam, I assumed Evangelion was doing more smart, intelligent satire, like, oh, he's just a kid. Oh, people are actually dying in this anime. Like, no, the actual Gundam people are dying constantly. It's a huge deal. And everybody's like real torn up about it. And people don't want to do this. Like, there's literal ethical debates in like Federation headquarters over
child soldiers.
Yeah. And like Evangelion's like whole thing is like, oh, we're going to take this seriously. It's not just like get the Gundam, have fun and kill people. It's like, no, that's Evangelion is a really episode ass that like, that's the, it thinks it's like commentating on a thing that was pretty much very thoroughly explored in this one. But also it is like somehow, I don't know how they pull it off. It's, I don't know if you could make something like that is as appropriate for kids, but also a like pretty gritty child soldier war fantasy. It's really good. Like, I don't know how they.
So I was looking into the hit, because I always like to take a historical lens, as I think you know listeners of this program are well aware. And the Wikipedia article on mecha anime has an interesting history section. I'll just read the beginning of the first paragraph. The 1940 short manga Electric Octopus featured a powered, piloted, mechanical octopus. 1943, Yokoyama Ryuichi's propaganda manga, The Science Warrior Appears in New York, featured a sword-wielding, steam-powered, giant humanoid mecha. The first series, I think it means anime series, in the mecha genre was Mitsutero Yokoyama's 1956 manga, Tetsujin 28 Go, which was later animated in 1963 and released abroad as Gigantor, which I think I've heard of. I'm not sure if
Did he fight Godzilla at some point?
Yeah, these are like super robot shows.
Yeah. But this is where I was going. This is what I thought was most interesting about this. Yokoyama was inspired to become a manga creator by Osamu Tezuka, who began serializing the manga in Shonen, an iconic boys magazine, in 1956. In this series, this is a 1956 manga in Shonen magazine, the robot, which was made as a last-ditch effort to win World War II by the Japanese military, was remote-controlled by the protagonist Shotaro Kaneda, a 12-year-old detective and, quote, whiz kid. The story turned out to have immense mass appeal and inspired generations of imitators. Skipping ahead a bit, anime critic Fred Patton wrote that almost all mecha anime plots, such as Monster of the Week shows, were actually metaphors for refighting World War II and defending Japan and its culture from Western encroachment. I guess I want to highlight two things. Obviously, first is this kind of, you know, refighting World War II, obviously huge. And, you know, you see this also with, we mentioned Godzilla. You know, Godzilla itself is giant radioactive monster wrecking havoc on urban areas in Japan. I don't, you know, doesn't need necessarily all that much.
Nationalistic, yeah.
Yeah. But when you mentioned this thing about child soldiers, it had never really occurred to me. And even, we'll get into Evangelion later, but it seems that really this idea of like child soldiers goes literally all the way back to literally the first giant robot manga in 1956.
Well, you know why that is. I'm going to say it. It'll make sense to you. Like, there was a huge generation of people who went from the ages of, like, you know, 8 to 16 when the war ended, or even 18, because the Japanese actually weren't pushing, like, 17-year-olds mm-hmm. in, I think, that hard, actually. They kind of realized that it was up, and they didn't have an issue of manpower. It was, like, supply. There were a lot of guys who grew up in Imperial Japan and really were pissed they didn't get a chance to fight. Like, they were... that's what Mishima was. Mishima was hey, you're too
Yukio
young.
Yukio Mishima, yes.
And, like, that was not a minority thing. It was, like, you know, that's what the Ku Klux Klan, during the guerrilla warfare against the Yankee oppressor, that's what they were doing. Like, it was mostly...
You can easily imagine, if you grow up your whole life...
Confederate mecha anime, yes.
You're 13... That would be awesome. Yeah, that didn't even occur to me. That's a great idea. Talk about... Wow, yeah, there we go. File under, to you know, future, whatever. Anyway,
future project.
But yeah, if you're 13, 14 years old and you're literally, and you're, you know, so you're okay, you're on that cusp of adulthood, but still, I mean, I think, you know, everybody, the people remember what it's like to be 13.
Can you imagine being a 13-year-old Japanese kid in 1943, how psyched you would be to go to war? Like how absolutely pumped.
You exactly. And there would be no like cultural I mean, you know, maybe you would have already had some degree of military training and, you know, probably, yeah. You know, it's okay. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting when you mentioned that. And I actually thought that was one of the lesser pronounced that what I got out of Evangelion was more about vaguely Freudian psychotrauma, not
you can call it cucking or whatever, but like Gundam is actually the show that like re-examined, I think, this trope as like a more like realistic
anti-war
view, like child soldiers does some anti-war stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Evangelion kind of takes credit for like, oh, we satirized it or we really examined the genre or deconstructed it. But like Gundam actually did this stuff. Better show.
So with Evangelion, like I have a love-hate relationship with that show because the animation is out of this world, right? It was so different for the time.
Yes.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. First four episodes. And also has like Shinji is a faggot. I think everyone can agree on this. It's like getting fucking robot. That's awesome. Your dad is making me live with three beautiful women. Right. What? What? You're the hero of the world?
I don't want to make this an Evangelion episode, although I've seen Evangelion in its entirety twice, as a younger man and as more recently. And so I could actually, but we should probably try to avoid it.
I'm pivoting back to Gundam, but it's the last thing about Evangelion. It's that the thing about that show is it's an actual deconstruction of both like more science fiction-y anime, which is like Gundam, Universal Century Gundam, right? Is like very science fiction-y. It's like when the Star Wars nerds put out like the physics for like blasters and stuff. Like Tamino made Gundam specifically with science fiction and military involved and how mobile suits would work. Whereas Evangelion is like a deconstruction of it. So I always tell people to watch Evangelion. And then also if you hate Evangelion as much as I do, well, I love hate it. Watch Gurren Lagann. That's all I'll just say. Gurren Lagann is like the super robot show of men. It is such so.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah, I definitely would describe it as a love hate. Sorry, go on.
It's going. Gurren Lagann goes back to like. No, actually, Gundam is cool, but we can go further. You know, like we can. Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's get into like we did the kind of early prehistory of this, but the way that I got to the Wikipedia article on mecha anime and manga was from the Wikipedia article on Gundam, which notes that it's the 1979 Mobile Suit Gundam, quote, defined the real robot mecha anime genre by featuring giant robots called mobile suits in a militaristic setting. So yeah, it like literally this is whatever else came before and whatever else came after. Mobile Suit Gundam is clearly the defining example. And tell me about it. Cause I've seen very little. I've seen, the obviously colony drop memes and various
Operation British.
Yes. So I'm familiar like in broad outline. I saw a little bit of, this is going to date me also, but Mobile Suit Gundam Wing on the Cartoon Network.
Tsunami,
which I understand. I mean, I think that was part of why I never really explored the series all that much was because, Mobile Suit Gundam Wing struck me as kind of, I don't know, they were responding to Evangelion, but not in a good way. It was sort of like, no, this whole thing is gay. Get back to the like the space battle, like the real,
Well, I should sort of explain. Sorry to interrupt you, but I kind of want to explain because there's a lot of Gundam. We just touched on this. There's a lot of different types of Gundams.
Yes, like, there's many different series. Is kind of the
there's and they're all official Gundam. Like the thing that they're not like takeoff. It's all
Bandai products, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And so Gundam. So when I'm strictly taught, and I have no problem talking about the other series because I've watched them in limited variety. But when I say Gundam, I'm talking about Universal Century Gundam because I'm a science fiction nerd, and there's this like literally in Universal Century Gundam, it's like the Axis versus the Allies. It's in multiple different ways, and there's some nuance there. But it's that's why I've even as a kid, I've always gravitated towards that. Mobile Suit Gundam Wing is like a girl's show. It's actually pretty good. I have apologetics for it.
It wasn't that it was terrible. It was that I it was like I Yeah, it just wasn't. It makes sense to think of it as a girl show. I would definitely say that.
Yeah, it was literally like meant for women. Like Hiro Yui, the pilot in that is like,
yeah,
the,
it was like this, like exactly this kind of, it was like Shinji crossed with Sephiroth crossed with, I don't know.
Yeah,
what,
and
it
was, that's a good one. I like that.
And I was just like, it didn't appeal to me, you know, like,
the main female character is literally bipolar. So like true right. to life.
Yeah. But okay, but so that doesn't take place in the quote Universal Century timeline. No. Universal
Century timeline. Yeah, and then there's also things like Gundam Seed, which tried to like reinvent it, or Turn A Gundam. By the way, Turn A Gundam, kind of bad. Tamino didn't want to make that a Gundam show. He wanted a completely different mecha show. But Bandai was like, you're gonna make it Gundam because that's what's gonna sell toys. But Turn A Gundam, I think it's got a cool idea. Basically, it's like post-apocalyptic and people start digging up mobile suits. But the woman who did Cowboy Bebop, Ghost in the Shell, the soundtracks for those, if you love those shows like I do, and you love the music from those shows, Yoko Kanno does the soundtrack for Turn A Gundam. So if you just want to watch it and listen to the music, or just go on Spotify and listen to the OST, like, just beautiful music. But yeah, there's other Gundam shows. So like Turn A Gundam, Gundam Seed, Gundam Wing, Iron-Blooded Orphans, which I hate, but Lewis seems to love. When I'm talking about Gundam, I'm talking about Universal Century, because there's a lot to extract from it. And it's canonically anti-Semitic. Canonically.
Yeah. it's we'll the main UC is like the main storyline. Everything else
the main timeline, yeah.
Because they're not cringe, the Japanese don't call them like what if timelines, but every other timeline is kind of like, what if this thing was slightly different? Like,
yeah.
For instance, Iron-Blooded Orphans, the timeline has like some name for it, but really it's like, what if Zenon never rose up? That's the timeline.
Yeah, essentially.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So what really, like, when we talk about Universal Century timeline, what we're like, the main sort of like axes are like the main sort of topic, even if you go throughout all the series in the Universal Century timeline, is about the 1 year war, right? And like the 1 year war, I actually know more about the 1 year war than I do about World War II. I could talk to you about the Battle of Aboaku and all the logistics. It gets really autistic and I love it. I can't, like, I love Gundam so much, but, and it's basically like the narrative of like the 1 year war, right? It's basically a one for one for like World War II. There's a lot of nuance in there and there's a lot of characters.
The problem is you can't look at it so much as like the Japanese refighting World War II or whatever. Too much, because it is so nuanced. Like the war.
Yeah, there's a lot of nuance.
It opens up with like effectively like nuclear strikes on population centers for both sides.
Yeah,
which like the war begins with like half of each side's population being killed by indiscriminate, you know.
Yeah, and they signed the Antarctic Treaty to like stop it. Yeah, to stop it.
Yeah, but there's like mid war, like we need to stop doing this bit, but like I don't think like. I don't know. That's more. It's reacting more to like modern nuclear war than obviously.
No, true in that respect, but also a lot of
Japanese,
like.
It's also the Japanese experience of World War II, which is your cities being firebombed and nuked. Like,
yeah,
it extrapolates the Japanese experience in the war to everybody.
Well, also a lot of the aesthetics, like it's like the Federation is like America, right? Like that's like the aesthetics of the uniforms, the political structure. And the Zeon is the, you know, it's more, it's like a mix between Prussian sort of, you know, monarchy of like early Germany and like World War One, and then like also like there's like Gurren, which is one of the main characters of Zeon, one of the main commanders. He's like the Hitler stand-in, essentially. But yeah, anyways, if Lewis, I think I interrupted you a little bit.
No, you go. I think the other nuance is, well, the nuance that's like, I guess the most obvious is that instead of being like, you know, rising powers being crushed in a Gentile uprising, Zenon is effectively a colonial power or a colonized people rising up.
Yeah.
Which is how the Japanese would view themselves, right? Like, even though I don't grok that with like the Japanese. I don't think they were a colonized power rising up in World War II, but that's what they think they were. That's how they view like themselves as like the rightful, you know, the rightful sphere of influence of Asia, and World War II stopped that. So yeah, no, it is interesting that like the main characters are not Zeon, right? Like you would think, oh, it's all Japanese, well, like self-inserting, but it's
not in the original series, right? But yeah, like later on, like we could talk about like the, so we had the original series, right? So that's like, if you want to watch the original series, go ahead. It is like a 70s show, right? So yeah, like
if you like what is it, what's my favorite anime? The one the politics one.
Legend of Galactic Heroes.
Yeah, if you like Legend of Galactic Heroes, you'll like it a lot. It's just like
it's a kid's version.
It's the kids version. It's a little bit better animated, obviously, because like not a high bar with Legend of Galactic Heroes in terms of like, you know, how fluid the movement is. But yeah, no, it's kind of very much of that era. That's why I think it's so watchable for kids, because even though like the content is kind of highbrow, the actual animation is like, you know, it's very pretty, yeah, and like appeals to children, you know.
And another thing is they don't do a lot of, even in the original series, they don't do like a lot of like Zeon evil. There's a lot of like shades of gray for both sides. Well,
actually, that's
even the Federation.
The most based part of it is that they don't do like big, like that's why like modern writers kind of suck, because they're afraid of making cool villains, so they have to do villains like just kick puppies constantly. The reason Zeon is bad is because they're the other side in the war.
Yeah, in
the original show, and that's extremely based. I'm 100% okay. It's like, oh no, they're the other side. Like the legitimacy of their like ideology and their political goals of independence is actually not even questioned. Zeon has legitimate goals, but so do we in opposing them. So it's time for the war. Like,
exactly.
Like Zeon does like evil stuff in the show and whatever. They don't all do evil stuff.
Zeon did nothing wrong. Okay, Zeon did absolutely nothing wrong.
Really? Let's get into British, that, so this.
Operation
is, this is
British
something
to
I'm,
go far enough.
All right. So explain to me, because I've never seen, again, I've never basically, yeah, I'm unfamiliar with this, with the main Gundam timeline. Let's start at the beginning. So there's the like the inner sphere and the outer sphere and the Battletech thing. There's like the Earth and then the colonies, which are outside.
Yes,
right.
There is Earth and
Earth Federation.
They have colonial power. They have settled this whole solar system.
And it's really cool.
It's really cool
because they actually use, like, they're called von Braun spheres, or and they sit at Lagrange points. So there's a lot of science fiction like knowledge Tamino put into this, and like those spheres are actually like literally ripped from von Braun's books, and it's incredible.
I'm familiar with the. I mean, like the von Braun thing that he like the, you know, is a kind of hypothetical.
The cylinders.
Humanity moved off to cylinders, like Earth's overpopulated. Humanity has left Earth in cylinders. Some cylinders are closer to Earth, some are further away. Some are near other planets instead of
Jupiter Earth. Energy Fleet, which plays like a major role later in the timeline. Yeah.
And so basically at the outer people are tired of sending stuff to the inner people, because that's where all like the mining and stuff is. They want independence. And they create a political
organization. It's more than just that, though, Lewis. It's more than just like, you know, we have to send our resources. There's a few things that go into this. Like Zeon Daikun was literally talking about like
the Zeon is the colony, right? Zeon is the colony in the Federation.
Zeon Daikun is the so he's like the thought leader. He's like a Nietzsche-esque Hitler. Che Guevara. Yeah, I would say that. And he's like this guy who, so side three is like behind the dark side of the moon. They don't get a lot of sun. This is where the Principality of Zeon gets its roots. There's this philosopher guy leader called Zeon Daikun. Now, Zeon doesn't exist. Everyone kind of rallies around this guy. This is the birth of Zeon, right? And he talks about, there's an idea in in Gundam Universal Century called New Types, and what New Types are like semi-psychic human beings, and they're because of the evolution going into space that the adaptation of human beings people start becoming a little bit psychic. He recognizes this and he builds like an entire philosophy about it, about freeing the souls of the people and the gravity of the earth, yada yada yada. But that's a set that, so there's like this there's definitely a huge metaphysical quality to Gundam as well. It's like super multi-faced.
But the biggest thing is that like there is like an ideology, like because this is like Japanese and not a cucked lib show, there is like the obvious like colonial implication, but there is, yes, like this racial element where there has been divergent evolution between spacenoids, which are, they're literally called spacenoids. Like
yeah, spacenoids, yeah.
Which is hilarious. And it's before noid was like a derogatory term. It was like noid is just like, you know, it wasn't like femoid or moid or whatever. It was just, you know, a word ending you could use to translate things. So like the spacenoid race is different than the Earth cuck race, you know? And a part of that is like I'm trying to remember the exact science behind it, but like living in zero gravity means you become better at anticipating certain things for your movement and your like
day-to-day something life. Like that.
And
some
more like, yeah, the genetic adaptations of like predicting your movement and matter and the world energy means like you, that can apply to just more broadly like some kind of sensory benefit.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's, but the there's this guy, he's like the thought leader, creates this ideology, and he gets people behind him for like a more peaceful, but not necessarily peaceful. He's not like a pacifist at all.
No.
Movement, and then his like, you know, some of his, he is kind of assassinated by a more
military, more based faction, family,
a more based faction within his people who are ready to fight. And that's what kicks off, and like the Earth Federation is like very defensively, like doesn't really intervene until like they're attacked, you know. Kind of, you know, there's different ways you can look at this, but and the different characters have different opinions on these things, and that's why Gundam is interesting. But
yeah, you can make a case for the Federation, and you can definitely make a case for Zeon as well. Like these are shades of gray. You can write, there's actually like college classes in Japan.
Well, they're not even shades of gray. It's just like they are functionally two national sovereigns, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like you came into do morality, right? It's just like these are states with national interests.
Yeah.
And at this point is like after there's a coup, there's a military buildup in Zeon, and a corresponding one in the Federation, and then there's a war, and the Zeon is better because they have the like these mobile mining. I mean, they're, you can correct me wrong. They're like
mobile workers.
There's literally the miners division, like in
they were disguising the mobile worker project because the Zabi family, which took over after Daikun got assassinated, they're the ones who are like, this is just a mobile worker program. Don't worry about this, Mr. Federation.
But there was, I believe, like some worker. There were mecha worker suits that are
industrial
that they're based off of. And that's why, and the Federation doesn't have them. The Federation has, like these fight, like because the Federation is America. They have core fighters, which are like Gundam equivalent, basically, but they're like aircraft.
And they're not bad either. But they're just not.
They're
as effective
arguably
as, like, mobile
like
suits.
You can make a case that they're actually better. Like if I was to be doing like economics in Gundam, I would say maybe you build a million core fighters as opposed to a couple thousand
mobile
Gundams,
suits. Yeah,
but. The show begins with like the first the secret project
engagement
of the Federation. It's not the first major. It's like the it's after.
Oh, you were talking about the RX-78 project.
Well, no, it's just like, you know, like the mobile suit Gundam, like the mobile the what do you call it, the
RX-78 Gundam.
Yeah, the actual Gundam. Like that's the first. Like it's the first. There are other Federation Gundams that are alluded to, but this is like the first ones are really good and better. It's like the first time the Americans built, like, I guess the motivation, I guess, would be like the Zeros versus like American fighter aircraft. Like, the Zeros were way ahead of the game fighter aircraft because the Americans didn't really know or give a shit about fighter aircraft. And that's the Xenon Gundams are the Zeros. And then it's like the Americans really buckling down and making a really badass elite thing.
Yeah.
Which is the main character's titular Gundam, which would be like something like the, you know, a P-38 Mustang or whatever, you know?
Yeah, something like that.
So the protagonist, so the story is told from the Federal, or at least in the, from whose perspective?
The Americans are the good guys. That's why it's
almost,
it's a nuanced show, is the Americans are the protagonists.
But almost every Gundam series is told by the, like a side of the Federation. It was only in like the video games, or except for one OVA called, amazing OVA called 0080 War in the Pocket. 10 episodes, go watch it after watching the movies. But that's told by Zeon, right? Zeon side. Now the video games talk about Zeon, and like this is where we actually get, we'll talk about this later, but this is where the SS files, like these Japanese manga writers that love the SS, like start writing Gundam. And that's really, you get a lot of the video game and stuff. But anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, that's why it's so interesting. It's because, like, yes, it's like they're refighting. They're doing colonial. They're doing commentaries. They're refighting the World War II to a degree. But the protagonists are the Americans, and they're like pretty unambiguously the protagonists.
Yeah.
And you know that's why people, like, there's people I don't like when people like talk about. I don't see it so much anymore, actually, because we've stopped it. Anime posting actually has decreased in the last few years, but how deep and nuanced and all the commentary going on in Evangelion, where like the average 70s anime like was already doing that. They were light years ahead of it.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. But and that's where the show starts, and it's the secret program where Amuro, who's the main character, I actually don't know what the origin of the name is. I know it sounds like American, and I always thought that was funny. But I don't know.
Who knows? I bet you Tamino has in his notes.
I'm sure there's some like note on
it. It sounds cool.
Yeah. And yes, he
I think of that like the French names in Berserk, and the German names, like the where the Vangertzweidenwogen, you know, maneuver or whatever in Berserk. It's like this is a Japanese person's imagination of what a made up German word sounds like.
Yeah. Amuro is like a nickname you have for your American friend, I guess.
We should talk about this. Is where the child soldier bit comes in.
Yeah. It's not intentional. They're like refugees from a Zeon.
Yeah.
So.
I think they're from Side 5, which is like a more Earth Federation aligned
cylinder. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the show starts out, and we can just brush over. We don't need to talk about everything, but. The important things about the show is that White Base, which is like this, you know, this show is made to sell toys, so why Bandai picked it up, right? But the show starts, and the Federation, you know, it's kind of getting their ass kicked very early on in the war, because they don't have mobile suits. They're not a kid, you know. They have to build back up. It's like the Sleeping Giant sort of situation. And the White Base, I don't remember exactly what happened, but I think some of the crew, the initial crew, gets killed. The White Base is like a mobile, it's like an aircraft carrier, a mobile suit carrier, right?
It's the first aircraft carrier, yeah. And the whole,
yeah, it's like
the
whole, yeah.
In the evacuation of Side 5, where Amuro lives, they deploy their forces and they just get wrecked. Like they're fighters and they're non Gundam, or they're non new Gundams, old Gundams get wrecked.
This is Pearl Harbor-ish, or like
in a way.
No, it absolutely is. But it's not. There's more. Like, it's not actually the first battle of the war, but like the show. It's the first episode of the show, and they're doing.
They're doing the bit.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm just autistic, and I'll be like, well, what about this? What about Operation? Yeah, but anyway. But so then the refugees get on, and their kids, and one of these guys is Amuro right now. White Base is commanded by this guy named Bright Noah, and he's instrumental through like. And his son later on becomes instrumental throughout the series too. But Bright Noah, which is a famous Bright Noah slap that I think people have seen the memes of, where he just slaps the shit out of Amuro later in the series because he's being a fucking child. But these kids basically get on this White Base, and they, Bright Noah, I forget exactly what happens, but I think he either commands them or they sit down at the chairs and they start operating the radios and the AA guns. And Amuro.
Go ahead. I watched it pretty recently. It's like, we don't like the actual like pilot of the ship is dead, and they're like, well, fuck, anyone on this thing know how to, because Bright is also like a, he's like a lieutenant when it starts out, or a sub lieutenant.
Yeah. He's not even really the commander. He's like the XO or something.
Yeah. And he's like, does anyone know how to like actually like pilot, like mechanically pilot a ship? And it's just some chick. And yeah. Like, okay. Does anybody know how to like, you know, do X, Y, Z? And there are some wounded soldiers who like are walking people through like how to fire the AA guns and stuff.
Yeah. It's like epic. And it's like a really stressful situation. Like, it's super stressful. This is why, like, you know, your kids would eventually be like exposed to death and violence at some point. And this is, that's why I agree with Lewis's take. Like, this is the perfect show to get them into it. Like, not into violence and death and stuff, but like get them acquainted with like how the world is actually ran, you know.
But also like how to react to things. Like, hey, just like if something goes really wrong, look for like somebody trustworthy and do what they say and like do it as best you can, you know. Like, it is very much a like they're child soldiers or whatever, but it's also like just like kind of don't be a pussy. Like,
yeah, don't be a pussy.
Just fire the AA cannon, dude. Like, it's just like a video game.
And unlike Shinji, Amuro gets in the robot. So
immediately, robot, like, I should get in the robot.
Oh, and it's funny because it's kind of funny because he knows about the robot because his father was the lead designer of it, or the lead engineer part of it. But yeah. That's besides the point. Anyway, so the show goes on. They go through these battles. They meet a lot of these characters, like, you know, Char, which I fucking hate Char with a burning Char's passion. Cool. I fucking hate Char. Char is literally a pedophile retard. So
Char's the primary. No, Charles. Char is cool, and you're doing like
Char's a traitor. Char's a traitor. Char's a traitor. Traitor.
He is the blonde. He is the antagonist of the show.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He is effectively the antagonist. He is like, if you see the blonde guy with the white mask and the white helmet from Gundam things, saying like,
that's the trope. Oh, Trump starts there.
Yeah, that's him.
Yes, I'm familiar with the memes.
But yes, he's not. Here's the thing about Char, though. He's not ideological. He's not like, he's just going for the revenge of his father, which is fine and dandy and all. But he destroys Zeon in the process. Who's the guy who said, this is no Zaku, boy, no Zaku? Who's that pilot? He was like one of the main. No, hold on, let me Google it real quick, because
the names are brutal. Keeping Gundam names straight is almost impossible. I mean, like Amuro and Char and a couple others.
Rombo Raw, who's like one of the ace pilots. His father was a Zeon Daikun loyalist that was, so we have to back in time, right? Because I want to shit on Char real quick.
No.
Rombo Rawl is the son of a Zeon Daikun loyalist. Assassination happens, Zombies take over, right? And instead of like, hey, Rombo Rawl, like, we're going to kill you, the Zombies are like, listen, dude, like, it had to happen. There's two factions. This is a power move. We're not going to kill you, but also, could you lead our mobile suit test pilot program? Like, could you do this for Zeon? Like, can you do this thing? And Rombo Rawl goes like, you killed my father, but this is the glory of our people. It sucks to suck, but I can put things in that. I'm not going to forget. I'm not going to forgive. I'm not going to forget, but this is for the glory of Zeon people. That is a way better character, and especially when he commits suicide later with a suicide attempt on the RX-78. But way more brave than Char Asdabol, which betrays everyone, which is a pedophile for some Indian new type girl, and just destroys Zeon in the process. One of the greatest memes from Gundam is you'll see it on YouTube Shorts or YouTube. It's like, it's Char and Zeta Gundam, which is a series later on, which is very, very good. And he goes, I never betrayed anyone in my life. And it goes, all the times he betrayed his friends, like, or his men, right, through the original series. It's hilarious. But anyways, yeah, fuck Char.
Whatever. Char is the antagonist of the show. He is
very
cool. He is doing maneuvers.
The Red Comet.
Obviously, you know, he's obviously a Red Baron kind of reference. He's a very Germanic figure. He's the most racist, I think, of all the, like, he's not.
He's
very new type focused compared to everybody else. Everyone else is like, oh, cool. This is like a cool thing. We have powers. You know, we're space noids or whatever. But Char is takes it further.
I think it's important to note that Armuro is also a new type, and he's on the Federation side. Yeah, there's new types on both sides of this war.
The first show is discovering like what is these. Like the new type, what is this new race of people? And the show is like, oh, well, these kids keep this aircraft carrier run by children mostly seems to keep getting like luckier than they should be. And
let's
like,
keep them in the seats, right? Let's not replace them.
Well, yeah, because they have this idea, and they have the ethical debate of whether it's, you know, they're child soldiers, but they're performing well. They probably are some, like, we think they might be this human evolutionary divergent thing, you know, and the show, you know, goes in all this stuff pretty well. And obviously, you know, they keep them in the fight for the, you know, because you got to keep, keep fighting new models of enemy Gundam to sell toys. But I don't want to get too much into like the actual like politics of it.
I want to move on from
just doing spoilers for the show at a certain point. I think the interesting thing is just that like it, Gundam is about like obviously heroic guys piloting vehicles and, you know, fighting, like defending their ship, and like basically as a Gundam fighter, Gundam mobile suit guy, you are defending like your home ships because that's where your aircraft carrier you fight out of, and like and fighting, and it is really good. It does the whole thing where like battle is, it goes down back to the melee combat range in some sense, some ways,
which makes sense because of the technology, right? There's a lot of thought put into these
kind
battles,
Dune-esque kind of thing like that.
Monotsky particle.
So I actually have a very different opinion than you do, like for all the science of it. I find the science of it, I mean, it's there. I know it's there. I think it's almost utterly unimportant to the show. Like, I don't think it actually.
No, it's not. It's compared to the narrative, no, but it's there as like a cherry on the cake. Like, that's why I grab on to Universal Century Gundam so much because it's like old school third edition 40K for me. Like, I can't stand the new 40K shit, but like there's so much to grab onto because like the coolest thing about Gundam is not really the main characters. It's all like the side characters, in my opinion. Like, the coolest character in Gundam is not Armor or Ray or Trasnable, in my opinion. It's Gato from 0083 Stardust Memory, where he's literally designed after like an SS officer. Forget the guy.
Yeah.
But the guys who made that OVA were like total SS files and were like, fucking SS is so cool. Holocaust never happened. Like, literally in interviews, like saying that stuff.
Yeah. You usually slide into like the other stuff, I guess. Like, the main narrative is like, you know, the Federation wins the war. Like, the Federation wins the war.
The Federation wins by a landslide. Like, just there's a turning point in the war after Zeon like invades Earth. After that, it's like, it was basically like the Battle of Gettysburg. Zeon never was able to attack Earth again in any meaningful way. It culminates at the Battle of Oboa Coup, and Zeon capitulates. Like, the leaders of Zeon are, especially when Char decides to kill what's her name, the fucking asshole. But anyway, so there's the end of the 1 year war, right? And it cost millions, billions of trillions of lives, like this incredible amounts of lives. And you really feel that at the end of the show, you really feel like it hits you. It's like, this is why, again, I'm just going to disagree with Lewis's take. It's like Grave of the Fireflies, but like done over a longer period of time. It's something that like children should experience.
There's a really good scene of them like basically on like effectively like a lifeboat after the fight, like just picking up who's like finding out which of the people on the crew survived and like who didn't, and they're like, and it's like, it's real good. It's like, and it's really good, and somehow I don't know how I guess it's just the animation style makes it more like palatable, but like an 8-year-old could watch this and not be like forever damaged.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect because it's like this understanding that life is finite, and you, instead of like your kids being children all the way to their teenage years, you can use this as a way to develop them into like a understanding, like back in the day or in times of trouble in World War II, like this is how it was, dude. Like, this is how it is. Your friends are going to die. Like, I will die. Your father is going to die.
Like, yeah. I would say it's better than getting them a dog, right? Like, dogs are, I mean, notoriously used by parents to teach you about mortality. This was a little less investment. Also, I like that there's actually another thing with mech anime broadly, mech stuff even in America, that inherently it becomes like honor obsessed, because it's like individual combat warriors doing individual combat stuff. BattleTech is also like
Gundam's teamwork. Gundam's all about teamwork.
But it's
not all about cohesive units. Yes, it is.
Yeah, there's some of that, but it's more like, I would say it's more of the Iliad. Like, it's more of like Amuro is like kind of the Hector of,
in the original series. Yes, in the original series. Yes.
And I think that's why people like big mecha stuff, is because you get these honor codes, and no, they're always fighting out places. Like, they're not fighting over major cities. It's very rare. Because everyone is like, all these people like get obsessed as their mecha pilots with like, you know, honor and being good and all this stuff. And the political implication, like, it's not that they don't do like stuff that's insane, like, you know, dropping, you know,
colonies,
cylinders full of people onto Earth, or form, I think they emptied the cylinder first. I don't remember exactly the details.
No, they gas. So Zeon gasses this because they didn't capitulate to Zeon. They're like, okay, well, we're gonna gas you. Gasses them, then drop. They're supposed to drop on, like, I think the original one was supposed to drop on Dublin. I'm not entirely sure, but there was an Earth Federation interception force, and they're like, fuck it, let's drop it on Australia. And they dropped it on Australia. So Ranbot just gets eliminated. in the show, I guess, but yeah.
So I like it, but it becomes like a good example for kids, I guess, because it's you get like the best of like what, even though they're doing this stuff, and that's what is presented as like bad, and everyone is pissed about that. But like the individual combat of soldiers is like, it's like very much honor obsessed, and that's, I think, a good thing. Like, that's a good
example. Yeah. So yeah, the original show has that samurai duel feel, yes, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess you want to get into like the Universal Century offshoots. I think I don't want to get too deep into the original show because it's good.
There's a lot to unpack.
It's really dense. Like, you can take it apart for
hours. Oh yeah, dude. I want to talk for hours.
I'm not familiar with the SS stuff and like the anti-Semitic stuff. Obviously, there's the big scene in the show where there's like some kind of ceremony at the Zeon headquarters, and they show they zoom out and they show like the banner, and it's literally like a rising sun and a Iron Cross combined.
The Zeon flag is really designed off the Nazi flag, the third Reich flag.
And then there's also, and of course there's the Imperial Eagles, and there's the famous, before we leave the original series or movies, is the famous Hitler speech.
Gurren's speech.
So the guy, the leader of the family, who's the leader of the Zeon, is talking with his like headstrong son who wants to deploy a super weapon, and he's like, "Listen, in the early 20th century, there was a man like you, who killed millions of people to prove that he was right." For the spirit, I see the spirit of this man, Adolf Hitler, in you. You know, and you need to stop because it went poorly for his nation and his people. And the guy
that's fucking gay.
It gets better.
It gets so base.
He says, "I'll show you what a man with the spirit of Adolf Hitler can do."
Yeah, Gurren in the original show is portrayed as like this kind of like, he's willing to do the things that like other people aren't to do to win. So yeah. Operation British was his idea. It's like, we're gonna drop a freaking colony on him. Screw him. Like, you know, he was willing to go that far. It's almost like the orders like Hitler would used to do on the Eastern Front. Like, yeah, dude, fucking bomb the civilian centers. Who cares? Kill the
Commissars, right? Yeah,
Yeah, get him. Get fucking kill him. Like, he was the most effective. Gurren gets a bad rap because of, like, gay Americanisms, but, like, Gurren in Japan, and as we leak, because he dies in the original series of the Battle of Aboku, but he actually gets killed by his sister, but that's neither here nor there.
He's betrayed, yeah.
He is betrayed, right? Like, and Shiner's counterattack never happens at Aboku. But the, but anyways, so we leave the show, but Gurren, who's the main, like, sort of overarching antagonist, not like, oh, Char's like the immediate antagonist, but over, Char's trying to kill the zombies, revenge his father, whatever. But, you know, and end of the show, but just I want to touch on this, is in Japan itself, Gurren does not seem like a bad guy. They even make a video game called Gurren's Greed, and that sounds like it's bad, but greed isn't necessarily a bad thing.
It means ambition.
It means ambition. And this, and I played the original video game because there's a lot of cool anime cutscenes in it. Oh, dude, it's so badass and cool. But it goes over, like, it's a strategy game. It goes over the 1 year war, and it's what if Zeon can win, and there's different endings and so on. And the best ending is Gurren, unrelenting Zeonic victory, and Gurren's the guy who lives, and everyone's better off for it. And so this is where we get into, like, the Japanese look at Gurren as the good guy. He's the effective guy that needs to, because everyone else has these moral quandaries about, oh man, should we do this? Oh, should we blow this thing up? And Gurren's like, yeah, blow it up. Like, fucking blow it up. We'll win. And once we were trying to look for a quick end to the war. We want Zeon to live. Well, so in Japan, the Japanese see him as a good guy.
Yeah. And he's also like, so there's this, I think it's like kind of Japanese World War II copes a little bit too. That, like, there were, like, chemical weapons projects the Japanese didn't use and stuff like that. And that, like, super hardcore ultra-rightists think they should have and stuff.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have affected things. I think they even had some kind of nascent nuclear concept as well. I don't remember the exact ideas about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of them, and the scene with this guy going to his father is basically saying, hey, we have the secret, basically super hyper long-range space laser.
Yeah, which is used later in a different series, by the way. It's really cool. Yeah,
it's, I want to use it to win the war, and the dad says no. He says I'm doing it anyway, which is like the Japanese, you know, officer corps telling Tojo or whoever, hey, we want to use the chemical warfare, and them saying don't do the chemical warfare stuff. And all those things, of course, in the real life, cuck. And because Gundam is new once, like he actually uses the super weapon and it fails. It doesn't actually work very well, and it works, but like it doesn't win the war, right?
Yeah, so it's not effective, and that is another trope in the original 1 year war, is that Zeon was concentrated on making the next big super weapons, and like, you know, like a Tiger 7 tank or like a the 1 year in Gundam, it's like Gelgoogs. Well, Gelgoogs are really good mobile suits, but like ineffective. But like Big Zam was a big one. Anyway, the 1 year war ends. I think we can move on for the 1 year war. Well, at least the original series. So, like I touched on the video games that are really cool. Like there's Battle Record, there's Encounters in Space. These are like PS1, PS2 games. You can get them in emulators. I recommend
these are
you
like
do.
Armored Core alikes or like giant third person mech shooter type.
So the older ones are like more hardcore. They're like Steel Battalion. If you ever played that on the original Xbox.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Yeah, so which is a great game that needs to come back. But yeah, so they're like a lot. So your robot's clunky when it's in gravity. It's clunky, right? And so it's like, it's like a BattleTech feel in a way, right? It's not like a super like these other Gundam shows. Like these mobile suits are like doing these crazy maneuvers, whereas in Gundam they have a lot of G-force and it's crazy. But anyway. But play those games, and there's a lot of good stories, and they go over like more minor characters that are cool, like the Black TriStars, and who's like the not Ryoko, who's like the ace pilot of Zeon that's so freaking cool. Anyway, there's a lot of them, but there's another series, and this is where we get into the Gundam OVAs that were literally done by like SS files. Where like the SS were the coolest people, like fuck Varaboos, you don't go far enough.
I wasn't sure. It took me a second to realize what you mean by SS file. It was like a SS, like as in Schutzstaffel, F-P-H-I-L-E.
Like they love them. Yeah,
they love the SS. Okay.
Yeah, they love the SS, right? And so, like, there, so the first OVA that in canonically is called 0080 War in the Pocket, and it goes over the last 2 weeks of the 1 year war. It is, this is literally another thing your kids should watch, because it goes over, it's from the perspective of a boy that's like, oh, it's on a, it's in a part of the colonies that's not affected by the war at all. It might as well not have even, it's like Midwest America during the war, like so far away from the war that they don't really, they feel it, but they really don't. And they're more like Federation aligned. And he's just imagining, like, I want to go to war. I want to have this whole excitement. And the show literally goes like, what if the war came to him?
Well, also his bit is that he's like, he's the
kid. Oh, you've seen it, Lewis.
He's drawing swastikas. I've seen this scene because it's cool. He's the kid drawing swastikas and
drawing
in his notebook and getting, and the teacher's like, you can't draw swastikas in your notebook. And he's like, but I love swastikas in my notebook. And
but you've seen it, right?
I haven't seen the whole thing. I saw that scene because you told me about it.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the opening scene to it where it's like the Zeon Special Forces team trying to take out the Alex Gundam? Oh, okay. One of the coolest things in all of Gundam in the series. It used to be on YouTube, but I think Bandai had it taken off. But it's like the Zeon's hardcore Zeon Special. So it's from the perspective of like Zeon too. So the POV is this little boy, but it's from a pro Zeon stance, and it's the first time it's like, going to happen.
He's like a pro Zeon.
He thinks
it's like the American kid who draws swastikas. Like
he is. Yeah, and so this awesome, and these are all sympathetic characters. It's like this hard grizzled Zeon Special Forces team infiltrating into an Antarctic base, and they're using these mobile suits, and it's really cool and really tragic. Just watch the series. But anyways, but it's like a 7 or 8 episode OVA. I think the episodes are like 30 minutes to 45 minutes, and it goes over like the end of the war. Like the war is basically going to end. But this colony is hosting a secret, you know, Gundam project. And this is a project that's meant for Admiral Ray, the pilot, later on. And basically, the Zeon Special Forces team leaves Antarctica, and they're reassigned to, like, find it again. And they infiltrate onto this colony, and they use, like, this cool mobile suit called the Camphor. Regardless, anyways, yada, yada, yada. But that series is really good because it's one of the – I won't spoil it any more than I already have. But at the end, it makes me tear up right now because I remember watching this before I was completely based. And even when I watched it like maybe 2 years ago when I was completely based, I just cry and I tear up because the last words said are, don't worry, because Al is crying, right, because like his friends die and so on. But none of his it's none of his school friends. It's the friends he made that in Zeon all kind of die. Spoiler alert. But anyway, that's not the crux of it. And he's like, and his friends that were, and it's in front of this blown up school because the battle that occurred there. And one of his schoolboy friends goes like, "Hey Al, why are you crying? Don't worry, there'll be another war. Don't worry, Al, there'll be another war." And it's like fucking, it's just the most heartbreaking thing. There's so many layers to that, and it's so...
It's very like Japanese, though, post-World War II. Like, we're going to get another one, guys. Like, we're going to run it back.
Well, it's just... Well, no, it's not even like... It's because they don't even know. They were like, oh, Al is the weird, like, kid. He's the weird kid that likes war. Right? And it's like, yeah, don't worry. Like, there'll be another one. Not knowing that the friends he made along Zeon throughout this OVA... are all dead. And he just goes like, what the fuck was the point of this? it's so good. 0080 War in the Pocket. From there, we have 0083, which is Stardust Memory, which is like, it's like Top Gun. It's so fucking good. I don't know if anyone's seen it there.
I haven't heard it.
And it, how much, have you watched anything that's post? Have you watched Charge Counterattack?
I did watch so much Charge Counterattack. I actually didn't find it to be super. I watched it. It wasn't like excellent. I do go to my Iron Blood Orphans.
We'll touch on that because I'll just be talking the rest of the time.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I do want to hear like something you said about the interviews with these guys being like SS heads. Like,
stuff from there. Yeah. So 0083. So 0080 has they have like this guy goes on record. I forget his exact name, and I'll talk about the Tomino interview where he literally says like that's about the Gundam is actually about the Jews, funny enough, and I'll touch on that too. So yeah, so 0080 and 0083, these are like the iconic OVAs of Gundam. They're not done by Tomino, who's the guy who did it. They're done by these like guys who just saw, like, they see Gundam like me, and they're like, that's so cool. I want to make a story in the Gundam universe away from like Armor Array and new types. And so it's more about like gritty war stories, right? And it's not about new types or like that aspect. It's about like Zionic independence and like away from like the international finance and all that. And that's what like 008, and like, even though you lost, you should keep up the fight. That's what 0083 is about. And in these interviews, the creators were like, you know, our inspiration for the writing this was literally for like, because we thought the SS were so cool and the fight at the bunker was so cool and how they never gave up. And the interviewer was like, oh, really? What do you mean? Because the Japanese don't have this like hang up about World War II that like everyone else does about like Nazis and shit. So they're like, oh, that's curious. Why? And they talk about like the Charlemagne division. And anyways, but yeah, that's it. And they also make a lot of their, and especially in later Gundam series, they make a lot of the newer mobile suits. They look like they're wearing stall helms and like they have like SS rune bolts on them and shit. And you can see the direct inspiration from it. A lot of the propaganda that they put out too, like the supporting material for the shows, the sort of promote the shows, it's like literally like Nazi propaganda. Like one of them is Gurren and he's like holding out his hand like in a Roman salute and he's saying Zion thirsts for the strength of its people. It shit like that. Tamina, so I want to talk on this real quick.
I want to broadly say why I think the Japanese like love the SS so much, and because they do, it is kind of odd, right? I think it fits very neatly into their the SS fits into Japanese history better than it does fit into European history, because the idea of a guy
having a warrior class
army, no, but his private army, like it's the leader's. Yeah. So the leader has like the national army or the clan army, but like also his private loyalists is not really common in Europe. Like you have a household that have its own knights, but they're not like a thing. But in Japan, having like, oh yeah, this is like his personal army, you know, and they love this guy.
Yeah, yeah. During like even the Tokugawa Shogun, it kind of had
the whole. That's like Japanese history. It's just private armies fighting, right? Like the occasionally there's a national, because Japan had like what, two national threats in its whole life, and that was
the Mongolians and
the Koreans as they were invading them anyway, like.
Yeah,
like it was like the Koreans fighting back for an existential threat to all Japan, which is it's a very Japanese outlook on like the Koreans fighting Japanese colonization.
Hey man, they saw K-pop before we did. They knew they had to take it out.
Yeah, but yes, like the pride. That's why I think it's what the Japanese are just, they really get behind the SS because they see like a very European, or they see in a European thing a very Japanese historical trend.
Well, in terms of that. Yeah, even Hitler talks about, if you ever read Table Talks, he actually glows about the Japanese quite a bit.
I'm the Table Talks disrespecter. I think it's bullshit.
I think Table Talks is the quintessential Hitler. We're getting off topic. But the anyway, so Tomino, well, here's the thing about Tomino, who's he's actually anti-Semitic himself. And Tomino before this is very anti-war, right? You know, like that's the main sort of trope of like Gundam, when the Gundam in Zeta Gundam, which occurs later, a different series that occurs later, that's where Char makes his reappearance. But in his notes, and he was interviewed on this later, he talks about Anaheim Electronics and the CEO of Anaheim Electronics. And Anaheim Electronics in the Gundam universe, they're like this military industrial contractor that makes mobile suits for the Federation, and they're like on the moon, right? And the moon's a contested territory with Zeon and the Federation. And he goes like, I can actually just read this verbatim. I think I gave it to DK or I just put it in the chat, in our chat not too long ago, but it basically says like, you know, the CEO of Anaheim Electronics, controls the AUG, which is the Anti-Earth Union group, and that's like that happens later in Zeon, but it's actually a fake organization that he controls through rumors and guile, and he's just trying to get rid of the Titans, which are like the new SS post 0083. Let me just touch on this real quick. So in Zeta Gundam, this happens in like 0087. There's two groups. There's the Anti-Earth Union group, which is are against because like the after 0080 Stardust Memory, which is when the Zeon almost, the remnants of Zeon were almost able to overthrow and restart Zeon again. They created this group called the Titans, and the Titans were like literally like they had SS uniforms. Again, this is where we kind of start again. And they're kind of this oppressive regime. They're not depicted as good guys at all, like at all in Tamino's depiction of the Titans. But anyways, back to what Tamino was saying, that happens in Zeta Gundam. That's the main, those main factions in Zeta Gundam. But Tamino kind of goes back on what Zeta Gundam is when he says, oh yeah, it was controlled by the CEO of Anaheim Electronics to defeat the Titans, which were, you know, Earth Aligned, which are like the SS. And he wants the AUG to eventually like bomb Earth or whatever and get everyone away from Earth so the Jews, because he's Jewish, can take over Zeon again. Tamino literally says this, and he goes like, he's not particularly smart, but he's guile, like how Jews control Hollywood. He literally says this, translated and everything. And yeah, anyways, that's so like Gundam is like canonically anti-Semitic at this point when Tamino says this, and he said this in his original notes back in the 80s, and he reaffirms this later on in an interview. He's like, yeah, the Jews are the ones that are starting these wars in order so they can take over the Holy Land again. Let me scroll up in our chat, but yeah, that's essentially where the anti-Semitism comes in.
You know, I was unaware that's of this.
Wild.
I guess that's like the, is that the, they were doing like the Mike Enoch bit where you're an anti-war activist when you know, in the first you start out and you just get more anti-Semitic as you go.
Tamino, yeah, for sure, yeah. Probably. Hold on, I sent this to Sven actually. Hold on, it'll probably be easier if I just look for Sven's DMs.
Well, name dropping on my podcast?
What?
Oh,
that's more likely than you think. I will say Sven did name drop us on the last show anyway, so I guess we can get.
Did he call you guys
really
nerds?
When? I didn't. I must have missed
Jesse. He, I liked a fucking tweet of his.
Gotcha.
All right. So hold on, let me forward this to the chat. I don't know if you guys can see it while you guys are talking. But right there, that's it. So I'll just read it out for the everyone. He is a this is from Tamino, right? He is effectively the leader of the anti-Earth Union group. At the same time, while he's known to produce various rumors, he never leaves behind any evidence that can be traced back to him. While the AUG itself is a fake organization, he was able to fleece his enemies into believing in its existence. He is the head of Anaheim Electronics and owns a production plant in the city of Granada. He is Jewish. Specifically says, there's three lines here. He is Jewish. He is the mastermind who is said to have the connections with both Zeon and the Earth Federation government. At the same time, he is not particularly gifted in any sense and is one of the many activists who push for the colony movement. So like, you know, the humans to leave Earth in colonies in order to fulfill the ultimate goal of the Jewish people. This is very similar to the way Jewish people control Hollywood. In other words, they intend to send all of the people on Earth up into the colonies in order to reclaim the Holy Land of Israel for the Jewish people. He's really little more than an entrepreneur who plays a small role in this racial movement. These details are never touched upon in the TV series. How incredible is this?
That's insane.
And I couldn't believe it when I first read this.
I have to watch Zeta Gundam now. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, Zeta Gundam is really good. And then Double Zeta is like, we're not going to get too far in the shows anymore. But I think we moved on from like show stuff. But when I couldn't believe this. I had to look this up everywhere.
Double Zeta, thumbs up or thumbs down on Double Zeta?
I give it thumbs up, but I understand why people hate it, because my main girl, Haman Karn, becomes like she gets touched by the char pedophile disease and goes after Chad Judo and the Junkyard Kids, but that's neither here nor there. But
your ability to rattle off these names is honestly phenomenal. Like, Gundam names are I like the show. It's very stylish, but it's very visual. Like, if I see a character, I know what they're about.
Yeah.
But like, knowing somebody's name in the show is like, who's like not in multiple episodes is extremely impressive of you. Like, I couldn't. And the names are so stupid. Dude, they're hilarious.
Yeah.
Like
Judo. Yeah, Judo.
Gundam names are the funny. They're like, well, it's like the Japanese always have like comedy names and almost everything. Like that's one thing Japanese shows do, or Japanese media or conventions are, is like they'll do comedy, like they'll do funny names in a serious show, and it's not weird. Like people have, that's a, it's like Metal Gear. Metal Gear is very serious, but they'll have like constant like, memes and like
Revolver Ocelot.
Dude, yeah, dude, like, I love the first Metal Gear Solid so much.
You know, it's a gaping hole in our catalog so far of topics we've discussed. But yeah, again, this is a Gundam show. Okay, so what? Okay, so that's wild. I guess I had no idea.
I had to look it up too. I had to verify this is true. And there's Reddit posts people coping about it, like liberal.
But now we have Reddit a trend, right? Or at least two data points, which is the Attack on Titan, which I'm only passingly familiar with. But isn't that basically the same kind of deal, right? Is what I understand.
Yeah, like I hate Attack on Titan because I'm a nerd about stuff. But yeah, that guy who did Attack on Titan is a Japanese nationalist. He's like super, like he's actually Jew woke too. Funny enough,
what I understand is it's the Jews who became the Titans, the titular Titans, right? They're these monsters that are trying to destroy
humanity. I don't know. I know there's like some like big ethnic cleansing in the spoiler alert. That's all I know. There's a big.
I haven't read the manga, but as I understand it, the German, like the people who are besieged by the Titans. I guess major spoilers. It is their basically being besieged by the Titans is their Morgenthau. They're being Morgenthau planned. They're the Germans.
Oh and shit!
I don't know anything about it, but yeah.
And the Titans will eventually kill them, like, and they're being Morgenthau planned by like the rest of society after they almost won World War II.
Yeah. So. I just know the guy who wrote it is very Japanese nationalistic, and I believe don't take my word on it, is that he's aligned with that anti-Semitic political party that has gained somewhat power in Japan. I forget the name of it. The Saitama? No, that's One Punch Man. I forget. I think it starts with an S, but I don't know if you guys were aware of that, but like anti-Semitism is like a growing thing in Japan right now. Like it's just immensely.
Japanese political parties are fucking schizophrenic. Like the anti-smoking party has like has seats in the legislative.
Oh yeah, very true. Well, welcome to parliament.
Like, yeah, well, no, it's a legitimate real parliament, in you know, which you know.
Well, that's why these parties can get involved. We'll get in. Parties, yeah, yeah. But here's the thing: the Japanese anti-Semitic party actually has large rallies and. Japanese people don't really go to these political rallies anymore. Like in the 70s, you had a lot of that. And even somewhat in the 90s, you did. But now they're like completely neutered. Like you look at they're far gone from like the Japanese samurai of like, you know, whatever, the 1400s. They're far removed from this, right? But they have a growing anti-Semitic party. And they had like 30, 40,000 people show up. In Japan, that's incredible. In America, you can't get people that many people to show up to a rally, right? I don't know if Trump even got those numbers.
He did at like his peak. Those are essentially peak Trump. I think he topped out around 50,000-60,000, but that was immediately before the 2016 election. Other than that, it's like peak Trump was 30,000-40,000.
But yeah, this Japanese anti-Semitic party is like no, and they're like seriously anti. They're not just like it anyway. But I guess we got to go back on the Gundam. But yeah, so and I guess we can sort of cross this across all Japanese media is there's even a manga. That is basically about the alt-right of Japan fighting Koreans that have invaded their country and Antifa to defend them. And I forget what it's about, but it's from a perspective of a high school boy. Again, you know, like youth being, you know, the warriors in Japan. This trope keeps on showing up. Gundam and I think in Attack on Titan, I'm not entirely sure because I only watched 4 episodes and I hated it.
The reason for it is because of the guys who founded manga in the 50s and 60s were kids who wanted to fight in World War II but weren't allowed because they were kids. And therefore, like, that's... obviously, like, kids being the heroes is not, like, because of this only. But it's a major thing that, like, you should have given us a shot to fight when we were 14. Now I'm writing the manga.
So that's so based.
60s. And then it comes the trope. And obviously, like, you know, kids are the heroes and all kind of fiction that's not, you know...
Yeah.
But I think it's a big deal in Japan, like because of this. That's why you know I think the shonen genre arguably exists because of this. Like
yeah, And I hate shonen too. Funny enough.
But those are who the shonen were, though, I guess is the point. Like shonen magazine shonens were these guys.
Like Shonen Jump and so on. I do have to say Dragon Ball Z and the original Dragon Ball are very good. But like other shonens, I just can't stand. But this manga, I forget what it's called, but it's about like the Japanese nationalists fighting Antifa and literally are fighting Antifa. And there, I read a couple, it's really hard to get the translations for this, like a real translation. I have a really good friend that speaks fluent Japanese. And so he does a lot of fans translations, and he's one of our guys too. He just loves Jap. He just, you know, is a weeb, but, he started translating a little bit for me, but it kind of, you know, it's a long process to translate a lot of this stuff. But there's even a Richard Spencer stand-in in like the third volume of this manga. It's funny enough. At least that's what's rumored, and I'll try to find it. But anyway, that's on my soapbox.
How much time do we have, DK?
Did DK drop?
Did we lose DK?
I'm here.
Our time like?
I can go for like another 10-15 minutes.
Okay. Do you want to hash out the Iron Blood Orphans bit?
Yeah. I want to hear your take because I hate that show, but you love it.
Yeah. So Iron Blood Orphans is like the most recent. It's very well animated with the most modern animation techniques, mix of hand drawn and some CGI for the fights. It looks really good. It is it's a what if scenario where Xenon never rises up, and as a result of them never, you know, gamers not rising up, the colonial oppressions become like increasingly worse and worse until they're basically just grinding everyone outside of Earth like into the dust. And like the people who actually are far enough from Xeon that would have been Xeon, like pass out in the Jupiter area, are basically independent, but only because they're so far away.
Let me step in here for a second. It has nothing to do with the original universe century.
No. So the original, it's a what if universe.
It's a what if. Yeah,
it's a what if universe.
I want to clarify.
If Xeon never rose up, and there's these mercenary units that it becomes basically Earth becomes run by like literally corporations that, and one of the things is they do is they have like the legitimate corporate, there's the legitimate corporate government, and then they hire out these like mercenaries for dirtier jobs. And you know, because Gundam is, you know, time Gundam's a flat circle, the one of these is like employing child soldiers, and the child soldiers rise up they become like an independent child soldier corporation, and get a contract with the Che Guevara of this universe, who's this princess of Mars, who's like the Earth Shield government's is the prime minister, ruler of Mars, and his daughter, who is a princess kind of, but because it's a hereditary prime minister or something like that, is like for freedom, and the governments are trying to kill her before she can get to Earth and give a big speech, and they have to fight through space, and they have to go because out to space and then back in through like secret ways to get past the government. And it's really just about like this show is just like the Manor Bun show. They are like a mercenary company. They're you know, a Manor Bun. It's like a Band of Brothers or Watership Down, or it's a Manor Bun show effectively. First, the ideological stuff is very secondary to just like the internal loyalty of the group. And that's very made very, very clear. And that like the actual existence of the group is a lot of characters prioritize like, you know, the ideology of like, you know, stopping oppression or whatever for people on Mars or outside of Earth versus like the continued survival of the group itself. That's the tension. It's like, do we act in the group's interests over the or like the ideological interests. It's very good. I think the fights are great. The animation is the best ever been in a Gundam show, in my opinion. They do the Gundams are controlled by either you can control them like Gundam style, like the original show with your hands and feet, or you can take like a risky surgery that has like a large failure rate, and you can gain some level of like Gundam with your mind control, and you know a lot of the characters go in for that at you know great cost themselves, but they're also against like they don't make new members join that they were forced into it by the previous owners of the company. It's really good, and I think
I think it sucks, and I think it's not science fiction-y, and I'm so autistic I can't even deal with it. All the things you can say that make it cool can be true, or could be true, and I can possibly jive with it. It's just that it's such a departure from the original Universal Century that, like, in terms of like the science fiction, that I can't deal with it.
They're doing also more like it's more like piracy or like ship stuff. Like they are when they fight in the original show, Gundams are like there's no like single combat samurai stuff nobility in the Iron Blood Orphans, but there's the fights are going on, but also there's like infantry attacks and boarding actions from ship to ship alongside the Gundam fights. That would be like a, you know.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh yeah, no,
there was like infantry battles.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So let me actually time out. I do have to say this, just like in both, like to go back, infantry in Universal Century is a big deal too. There's an entire series based upon it, so I had to get that in there, which is another reason why
the show,
I.
Doesn't exist. But the problem is,
in the original show, it doesn't exist. Yeah, the original show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's the combat's not like integrated in the way it is, but it's very much integrated in.
I might have to give it a shot then.
Yeah, they also do like stuff like they do a very realistic portrayal of like I guess like what you call like a military relationship between two people, where the main character is not a good leader, unlike you know the original Gundam where like leadership it's like you know it's like Asian stuff. And even most Europeans are aware, where combat ability translates to noble birth and leadership abilities. Where in this show, there is one guy who is the good like leader, charismatic and strategic, and the other guy is like the grug who doesn't actually want to command. He just wants to fly Gundams, and he's loyal and they're comrades, but he's not a charismatic leader like in the slightest. And that's a very realistic like that's how. Militaries are arguably designed along those lines that like there are people who there's like multiple tracks you can go with your career, and one of those tracks is like just becoming a subject matter expert as like a warrant officer or whatever, even though you're not actually leading people. And that's kind of what this one portrays, is like he's the number two guy in the organization, but he's not the number two leader. If that makes sense. He's not even a leader at all. But it's very good.
I will give it another shot. But I just hated the mobile suit combat. But that ship-to-ship boarding stuff, that gives me, like, the cool Legend of Galactic Hero vibes when they did those boarding actions.
And there's also a couple land battles. It's more integrated stuff. Like, there are infantry, there are mobile workers, which are, like, the legitimate industrial things. That are like they're very like tiny, basically tiny Gundams, and then there's like the real full size mobile suits, and these all they're all fighting on the same battlefields.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't want to go too much into it. Like, I really enjoy it. There is like more degeneracy because it's a modern show. There's like they go into space and meet like the far away space culture in Jupiter area, and they're kind of more degenerate than you know you would like but you know whatever. I mean
they're here's the thing about like Japanese and like I would say like homosexuality or something like
no it's like harem stuff.
Oh, I don't give a shit about that. What's whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, I, one of my like favorite anime. One of them, that's fucking baller. Then harem stuff is cool because like one of my favorite animes ever is like Tenchi. Like the OVA for Tenchi is great.
I don't. I did find it like off putting, but it's kind of supposed to be, like it's supposed to be somewhat off putting.
I essentially got all my bits in. What about you, Lewis?
I could go forever if we could go if we went back to the original Gundam and like picked it apart.
Oh yeah, we know definitely, but I just
we could do
know.
A deep dive on another time. It sounds like, and because I was if we're going to time, as we've been talking about this. I mean, I don't know necessarily want to do a whole episode on Evangelion, but it may be, or you know, like we could do. I'm just saying, like it, yeah. You know, everybody loves giant robots. So
the Gundam figures and how they kind of became the basis for like the Gundam. I wanted Gundam in the West, like the Gundam didn't come over as fast as the toys did. The toys beat the shows to America like by a lot, like by decades, I think, or at least one decade. And this is probably the BattleTech episode. I believe a lot of like early at least a couple of the factions were just like based on or straight rips. There were some mecha miniatures game that was just like. At least one of the factions was just Gundam stuff. Like, they were just taking Gundam, like figures. And then, so Gundam became a
Robotech?
Maybe it was.
No, I'm thinking about some drone, yeah.
I'll have to do the research for the prep. I have this memory.
But, sure, but we can, it's a deep well to return to. Obviously, and you know, what's funny is we mentioned Metal Gear, we mentioned it in the context of like it's, of course, Metal Gear itself is about, like, the titular Metal Gear is a giant. Gundam, right? So it's a deep well for sure. And
I think I can sign off a good remark to sign off with. It's
sure
giant robots are important.
Giant robots matter.
I have one thing to say before we call it. I'll just say Zeke Zeon for the glories and ideals of Zeon. Zeke Zeon.
Zeke Zeon. Take care, everybody.